From feature story news in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, Hamas militants are blamed for the collapse of a three-day ceasefire as President Obama calls for the immediate release of a captured Israeli soldier.
If they are serious about trying to resolve this situation, that soldier needs to be unconditionally released as soon as possible.
Also today, Uganda overturns a controversial anti-gay law following strong international pressure. And as two Americans infected by the Ebola virus head for home, we have the latest developments from our Africa correspondent.
Probably the most assertive action has been taken in Sierra Leone, where the Army and Defence Force and other security forces have been called in to quarantine communities, villages, and also large suburbs.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Israeli forces are searching for a soldier they say was kidnapped by Hamas at the start of a now shattered 72-hour ceasefire in Gaza. The 23-year-old disappeared when Israeli troops were attacked as they tried to destroy a Hamas tunnel. President Obama is demanding his immediate release, as Priscilla Huff reports from Washington.
If Hamas is serious about the proposed ceasefire with the Israelis, they will release the Israeli soldier immediately, says U.S. President Barack Obama.
I think it's going to be very hard to put a ceasefire back together again if Israelis and the international community can't feel confident that Hamas can follow through.
President Obama again defended Israel's right to defend itself, saying no nation would tolerate rockets raining down, and he condemned Hamas's strategy of hiding its weapons in schools, hospitals, and tunnels. For now, President Obama is putting the responsibility for restoring the ceasefire on Hamas.
The ceasefire's collapse leaves diplomatic efforts to end the conflict in Gaza in tatters. Philip Hammond is Britain's foreign secretary.
The reports that Hamas broke the ceasefire are correct, then that is very serious indeed, as is the kidnapping of the Israeli soldier, which will make it all the more difficult to re-establish a ceasefire to allow a humanitarian pause in Gaza.
President Obama also addressed the growing controversy at the CIA after an internal investigation found officers penetrated a computer network used by the Senate Intelligence Committee. He said he has full confidence in CIA Director John Brennan. Large neighborhoods in three countries in West Africa have been quarantined in a bid to control the spread of the deadly Ebola virus, which has killed at least 730 people in just 2 months. The leaders of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone have abandoned plans to attend next week's African Leaders Summit in Washington because of the crisis. FSN's Gary Alfonso is in Nigeria.
In Sierra Leone, the army is enforcing controlled access to quarantined neighborhoods, and public meetings have been banned for 60 days. In Liberia, most border crossing points with neighboring countries, especially those to Guinea, have been closed. A plane has been sent from the U.S. to collect two American doctors infected with Ebola from Liberia. They will be treated in a hospital in Atlanta. In Lagos, in Nigeria, 12 more people who had contact with a Liberian airline passenger who died of the disease have been identified and tested. Airports across Africa are hastily installing special scanners to identify passengers who may have Ebola symptoms.
Controversial anti-gay legislation in Uganda has been annulled by the country's constitutional court. In a landmark ruling on Friday, it said there was no quorum in parliament when the bill was passed, rendering it illegal. Several donors have withdrawn international aid from Uganda in protest at the law. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. In another strong sign of the state of the U.S. economy, the country added 209,000 jobs in July. It's the sixth straight month the U.S. has seen monthly job gains exceed 200,000, a feat not witnessed since 1997. From FSN's business desk, William Denzelow reports.
Every major sector saw a boost to hiring and jobs, but growth was especially strong in construction, manufacturing, and in professional business services. While the job numbers released by the US Bureau of Labor Statistics came in slightly lower than many analysts expected, it's still a sign that the economy is getting stronger. The unemployment rate did rise from 6.1 to 6.2%, but the number of people in the job market also increased. Small wage growth and the number of long-term unemployed, however, remain areas of concern.
The Russian government has banned the import of fruit and vegetables from Poland in the same week that the European Union hardened economic sanctions over Russia's failure to disarm separatists in eastern Ukraine, though authorities in Moscow say the decision was related to pesticides found in Polish imports. FSN's Europe correspondent Sandra Gutman reports.
On Friday, Russia's food hygiene authorities prohibited the import of vegetables and fruit from Poland starting in August due to alleged contamination from pesticides. Russia is a key market for Polish produce, earning the country more than 1 billion euro a year. The ban, believed by many to be in response to fresh US and EU sanctions against Russia over the crisis in Ukraine, has triggered a social media response in Poland, with many users posting pictures of apples in protest. The action follows a similar ban on Ukrainian products this week, as well as a January decision to ban pork from the European Union, which prompted the EU to launch a complaint with the World Trade Organization.
And that is the latest feature story news. Simon Marks reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports.
I have unequivocally condemned Hamas and the Palestinian factions that were responsible for killing two Israeli soldiers and abducting a third almost minutes after a ceasefire had been announced. And the UN has condemned them as well. I want to make sure that they are listening. If they are serious about trying to resolve this situation, that soldier needs to be unconditionally released as soon as possible.
President Obama addressing the latest developments in the Gaza conflict as deaths on both sides continue. Mr. Obama was speaking following the news of the collapse of a 72-hour truce just 90 minutes in. Over 1,400 Palestinians and dozens of Israeli soldiers have been killed during the conflict, which has dragged on for over 3 weeks. Speaking on LBC Radio on Friday, UK opposition Labour leader Ed Miliband, who recently discussed the Gaza crisis with President Obama in Washington and who next year hopes to become Britain's first Jewish Prime Minister, had this to say on the conflict.
It's a tragic situation in Gaza, including the apparent kidnapping of an Israeli soldier today. Look, I've said very clearly two things. First of all, Hamas is, in my view, a terrorist organization. There's no excuse for their rocket attacks on Israel. But consistently, before the Israeli incursion into Gaza happened, I've said that I oppose it and it was the wrong thing to do, because I feared it would lead to the loss of innocent life, and because I feared it would not make Israel more secure, it would make it more insecure. And I think the terrible, appalling scenes we've seen, in particular at the two UN schools, I'm afraid tragically vindicates that view. That's why the thing we need most of all now is a ceasefire, and it's terrible that the ceasefire that was planned for today has not happened. We need a ceasefire on both sides. And crucially, we've got to get back to the negotiations we need for a two-state solution. Now, on the issue of recall of parliament, we'll keep that option open. If I was David Cameron at the moment, what I would be doing, what I would be spending my time on, is doing everything I can to put pressure on both sides to have that ceasefire that is required.
Do you think he's doing enough on that?
Well, I think he's in the wrong place on this, because I agree with him about Hamas, and Hamas is a terrible and disgusting organization, but I think he should have said from the outset that this incursion by Israel into Gaza was not going to solve the problem. And it isn't solving the problem, it's making it worse. And, you know, I'm a friend of Israel, as well as of the Palestinian people, but I think it is terrible what is happening, and I think it is losing Israel friends right across the international community.
I mean, bearing in mind your own family background, which you've talked about openly on many occasions, how difficult do you find it criticising Israel?
I don't. Look, as I say, I'm a friend of Israel, I'm a friend of the Palestinian people, and I desperately want the two-state solution that we need. And you know, obviously I've got relatives in Israel, and I understand the deep insecurity that people in Israel feel. But I felt right from the start of this that it was going to do Israel no favours. And we've seen the loss of Israeli soldiers, as well as some civilians, as well as terrible numbers of Palestinian civilians in this case. And I really fear and feel you know, it's not only wrong, and it's not only terrible and appalling scenes we've seen, but it is also deeply, deeply counterproductive for Israel.
But why do you think people are more exercised about this than the actions of Assad in Syria, where, I mean, tens of thousands of children have been slaughtered in Syria, and yet we don't really hear much about that. We don't hear much about that from you, David Cameron, or indeed anybody else.
Well, I think the situation in Syria is desperate, and I think people in Britain are deeply concerned about the situation in Syria, and both in the humanitarian assistance, the insistence on there needing to be proper talks in Syria and a proper process, is absolutely right. But I think there is a deep feeling that we've had a decades-long problem of Israel-Palestine, an unsolved problem, which is not only a terrible problem in itself, but is the source of much of some of the problems we have in the wider region. And, you know, I think there's one terrible and interesting thing about this, which is the peace talks collapsed, and we've then seen this terrible cycle of violence. And I don't say the two are directly connected, but I think the vacuum, nature abhors a vacuum, and unless we get those peace talks going, I really fear for the future.
Do you think that Israel has given up on a two-state solution to this conflict?
You know, I don't, because I met Prime Minister Netanyahu a couple of months back, and he is not only in his private statements to me, but in his public statements, he says he believes in a two-state solution. But as somebody who considers myself a supporter of Israel, I just look at the pictures and what has happened and what has unfolded, and I've said this indeed to Israeli friends and contacts that I have, and I just think this is going to decrease Israel's security, not increase it.
Labour opposition leader Ed Miliband talking to LBC's Ian Dale. This is FSN Reports. The Pentagon says two Americans infected with the Ebola virus will be returning to the US aboard a non-military aircraft. Once they're back on US soil, both Dr. Kent Brantley and Nancy Wrightbol will be treated at an Atlanta hospital. US officials have already announced a travel warning for the affected countries, Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone, where over 700 people have lost their lives to the virus. The head of the World Health Organization earlier described the outbreak as out of control. Gary Alfonso is our Africa correspondent.
The nations of Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and even now Nigeria and next door Togo and Benin have started looking very seriously at isolating some communities that may have come into touch with people that have already contracted or showed symptoms of Ebola. Probably the most assertive action has been taken in Sierra Leone, where the Army and Defense Force and other security forces have been called in to quarantine communities, villages and also large suburbs in the capital, where the soldiers are now controlling access in and out of suburbs where people have been treated for Ebola, and also where the families live of people that have passed away of the symptoms of Ebola. So a very serious situation in these three countries, where the authorities are now taking precautions and preventative steps to try and stop people that might have been infected from coming into contact with people that have not been infected yet, because as we know, this disease is transferred through the transfer of human fluids and also touching. So it's not necessarily airborne, and also only one-to-one contact with an Ebola sufferer or someone who has died of the disease can cause this disease to spread very quickly. In Liberia, the authorities have closed every single border that leads into Guinea. Guinea, the country that has actually received as recorded most of the deaths in this case, where the authorities have now closed the borders between Liberia and Guinea.
And Gary, as we hear reports of two infected Americans returning to the US for treatment, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention here in the US, is sending a sizable team of experts to help the affected regions in West Africa.
Yes, the CDC plan, no doubt part of the World Health Organization's plan to immediately and very quickly distribute $100 million to the affected regions in West Africa, because this is by far the most serious outbreak of Ebola in the history of this disease. And since it's been first diagnosed in 1976 in northern Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, and southern Sudan. So very much part of an international campaign to try and not only stop the spread of the disease, but also treat people, the hundreds of people that remain treated in hospitals and clinics and isolated in very large cities like Monrovia and also three countries in West Africa. There is no doubt that this disease is by far the most serious health concern in West Africa in the past few years, and the World Health Organizations and organizations like the CDC will have their work cut out for them. But then on the other side, lots of aid workers are being extracted from these three countries and also from areas in Nigeria, because there's major concern that contamination could spread way beyond this part of the world.
FSN's Africa correspondent Gary Alfonso. And staying on the continent, Uganda's Constitutional Court has overturned a controversial anti-gay law brought in February. The new law allowed for life sentences for aggravated homosexual activity and banned the promotion of LGBT lifestyles. FSN's Leon Senyange is in Kampala.
Well, Kevin, this is a law that caused much of excitement within Uganda. We very much know that 80% of Ugandans well supported the law upon its signing in February. But today, the court, the Constitutional Court in Uganda, suddenly overturned that particular law, the anti-gay law. Well, this is because petitioners themselves had cited legal gaps. And this, I must say, was strategically seen by these particular petitioners who... Actually, among them were a member of parliament who was in the house on the type of voting on that particular on the anti-gay bill. Five judges in the Constitutional Court today ruled all in the favor of overturning this particular law, citing the fact that there was no quorum in parliament on the 20th of December when this bill was passed by the August House here in Uganda. And suddenly, out of this all is that the state can appeal this within the next few days. But, the LGBT community themselves came out jubilating after this kind of law was overturned. And currently, we're looking forward to seeing how far it's going to be and how the reaction is from, the public themselves here in Uganda and the members of parliament who actually... passed the bill.
So what part did international pressure perhaps play in this decision today?
Well, certainly the international community has played much of has had much of an influence on the overturn of this particular law. We very well know that Uganda, upon the consenting towards this law, had aid withdrawn. The US withdrew approximately $118 million of aid to the country. Now, this, of course, affected several projects, HIV-AIDS projects. Some of these were funded by the U.S. government were suspended. Organizations that were receiving aid also had quite a turnover. And definitely the domestic taxes were increased as of the budget that was read in this country last month. So it's quite taken a toll on the Ugandan economy. And you definitely would say that a bit of the withdrawal on aid and the pressure coming in from the international community has had something to do with the overturn of this law.
FSN's Leon Senyange in the Ugandan capital. And finally, tonight, FSN Spotlight. And with that, here's Simon Marks.
Today on FSN Spotlight, at the end of a long week dominated by generally dreadful news from various global datelines, a few moments of something lighter. On the other side of the Atlantic, headlines have been made this week by one of America's biggest TV stars. Conan O'Brien has arrived in Britain. His TV show is airing there on a new cable network. And as part of the buzz surrounding its launch, he sat down with our friend Nick Ferrari of Britain's LBC Radio, who started by asking how Conan was finding Britain.
Well, it's changing all the time. First of all, you now have a tropical climate. That did not used to be the case. But now coming here is like coming to Orlando, Florida. So that's changed the whole perception.
What do you pack?
Now it's just sunscreen. I never thought that would be the case. But now you come to London and you bring a hat, you bring sunscreen and a Speedo bathing suit. Those are the things you bring. It used to be an umbrella and big boots. No, it's all changed. You have a completely different world now.
In the midst of time, Americans would look across at the UK and they would think of probably the Queen and a lot of fog and stodgy food.
Yes.
We have moved on, not least possibly because of 2012. What did that do? How did that change, possibly London 2012, change the view of the UK around the world?
Well, first of all, I think the food cliches have gone completely out the window. You have excellent food. I mean, I wish I could remember the name of the restaurant. I keep forgetting it, but I had some of the greatest. I was in Italy recently, and I came to London, and last night I had the best pasta. It beat anything that I had in Italy. I kept going back to the waiter and hugging him. I was weeping.
Well, that's what you're going to tell the court anyway. That's why you were. That's
why exactly. Yeah. Well, I also, you know, I wanted a rub.
But who doesn't?
A cuddle. Yes, I think that's clearly much more sophisticated.
Yep.
And I think a lot of Americans in the past, a lot of our attitudes came from the movie Mary Poppins. So we really thought that you spoke like Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
And then you're here, and I think 2012, we all learned that that you guys have evolved.
Yes.
You've actually evolved far beyond anyone in the United States. You speak proper English.
Yes.
You seem to be better mannered. You have excellent food. So yes, and now you have the climate of Texas. So really things have changed quite a bit here.
We're starting to kick on a little bit. What makes you laugh?
Well, I have to say, I like people that don't take themselves too seriously. I hate pomposity. So, it's funny, when I started out in comedy writing, when I was on The Simpsons, I started out on The Simpsons and worked there for a while. And I'm not just saying this because I'm in England, but I thought you always thought you guys were ahead of the curve on comedy. And
what specific? Who do you look? Who would you be talking about there then?
Well, Blackadder was really big for me. Loved Blackadder. And you did something different. In America, when we have something that's working, we immediately make. The company says, okay, that's funny, make 10,000 of them overnight. And one of the things that you have here in Britain that I've always admired is you'll have a great show, a terrific show like Fawlty Towers, and you'll only make so many. You'll make as many as are good, and you'll stop. Blackadder, the same thing. Alan Partridge. I discovered that show and started having Steve Coogan on my program in America, and people didn't know who he was. He hadn't been in any American movies yet, but I kept insisting that he come on the show because I was such a fan.
Yeah.
So I like the absurd. I mean, Python was actually the beginning of the whole thing.
Yes.
For us in the States, it changed a lot of our opinions about what comedy was.
So how much does the story of The Office underscore your argument? Because in the UK, Ricky Gervais, I think, made two series and a Christmas special. Now, The American is hilariously funny,
right.
But you sense we might be getting close to jumping the shark on that show now.
Well, they're done. They've been done for a while, but...
I think they had 8 or 9 series, and UK did 2.
Yes, they went on for about 10 years, and a good friend of mine, my former writing partner, headed up that show.
Right.
So I can only say the nicest things about it, or he'll hit me. He'll punch me in the throat.
Yeah.
But I think there's a magic to not getting quite as much as you want. Meaning there's this magic to that's all you're going to get. So when Ricky Gervais made The Office, and it was fantastic.
Yes.
I just wanted more. All of us wanted more, and we were hungry for more, and there was a power to saying, that's it, getting out when you're on top. And I think that's always been part of the great ethos, if you want to call it, of British comedy, is that they don't stuff it down your throat. They make something really good, and then you leave you wanting more.
The sort of show that you do in the US is the mainstay of American television. It's hugely important to audience. It's hugely important to networks. It generates all the money. They go to bed switching off whatever channel you're on. They wake up and it's the same channel. They're locked into you. Those shows have never really worked in UK. They've never been able to get a guy. And we've got some talented presenters, no question. Right. Why do you suppose that is?
I think it was invented in the United States for whatever reason. It's a very American kind of invention. It started out as a time-killing show. You know, when TV first got invented in the late 40s, they found out that they had this extra time, and someone said, let's use it. And so if you look at the early shows, Steve Allen, you know, it becomes much more sophisticated. But in the early days, they're literally killing time. And I think it's something that just got into our culture, which is you stay up at night.
Yeah.
I was Johnny Carson was a huge figure in the United States. And I think a lot of people in Britain, UK, never really got to know who Johnny Carson was. But he was.
You watched him as a child.
As
you?
A child, and
I mean,
it was
you must
a big.
Have been a real child. You'd only have been in your.
No, when I was a boy,
yeah.
My dad would let me stay up and he would let me watch. And so it was a way that I connected with my dad. We would watch Johnny Carson together. So it's one of those things that's hard to explain. It got woven into our cultural fabric somehow, and then it just became a habit.
Right.
So we're in that habit. You guys have different habits.
Yeah.
You know, the way that you watch and understand football,
yeah.
And we're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I think the hope is that comedy, good comedy, is universal. So we do, our shows are very comedy heavy, and we do have chat, but it's very silly and absurd. And my hope is that that translates, because a lot of the things that we do on the show translate very well on YouTube here and on the internet.
Conan, you mentioned The Simpsons, and obviously it's a massive show that we've enjoyed in the UK mm-hmm. for years. You'll have been asked this question so many times. What is the magic of The Simpsons? Hasn't it beaten just about every record you can shake a stick at in the US
Yes,
now?
It has. It's been on the air, I think, longer. It certainly broke the record for any animated
yeah.
show, but the thing about that show, it's funny, when I first went to work at The Simpsons, I prided myself on, I'm funny, and I'm just going to write the most far-out, weird, crazy episodes that are going to just blow people's minds. And one of the co-creators, Sam Simon, said to me, the thing you have to remember about The Simpsons is it's a family, and they love each other. And I thought, you know, what's he talking about? This is rubbish. Who cares about, what do you mean they're a family? And when you're a comedy writer in your 20s, you just want to be the fastest gun. You don't want to hear this. But I absolutely believe there's something to that people buy into them as a family. And there's also the magic of they don't age. You think of any other show, people, you know, Bart Simpson now would be 55 years old.
He couldn't be
saying cowabunga and riding a skateboard anymore.
But among the writers, is it a very competitive, is it a friendly atmosphere? Is it quite a hostile work environment?
No,
is it very hugely competitive?
No, not competitive at all.
Really?
I've worked in very, I don't know how familiar you are with Saturday Night Live, but it's our,
of course I am.
I worked on that show as well and loved it, but that's a very competitive environment
sure.
because it's live. There's only so much time every week and you have to get a sketch on. You're very worried about getting a sketch on, which means if you and I are writers on Saturday Night Live, it's very natural for me to worry that if you get two sketches
yeah.
on, I might not get a sketch
so
on.
I'm going to beat you to death to get my sketch in ahead of you.
And you will. You
yeah.
will beat me to death. But The Simpsons, we're in a boat and all the oars are pulling in the same direction. And we're all going in the same, we're all trying to write the episodes, we're all working together.
Your stock in trade is a lot of political satire.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a story recently here. Ed Miliband, who's the leader of our opposition party, mm-hmm. the leader of the Labour Party, got a lot of criticism because he wanted to catch up with Barack Obama and he flew all the way over to the US to gain about 20 seconds to meet with the president. Is it worth it?
20 seconds with the president?
Well, he got a bit longer, but not a lot longer.
Sure, I think so. He's Barack Obama, but he's still the coolest guy in the room. So yes, I think 20 seconds with the president's worth it. It depends on what he paid for on airfare.
Yes.
You'd have to break down exactly what he spent. And I need to know I need to see his receipts.
Yes.
If he spent, you know, more than, you know, 10,000 pounds, I'm not sure.
Yes.
But if it was a little, if it was in that ballpark, then yes.
Okay, there is still magic about Obama, is there?
You know, it's funny.
What about for the average American, I wonder, Conan?
Yes, I still think there is. I think, obviously, any American president who's in his second term, people start to, you know, you're there for 4 years and then you're around and you're the house guest that's sticking around. So it's just a tradition in America that people, right. I think, start to give their leader a hard time in the second term.
That's Conan O'Brien talking there with Nick Ferrari on Britain's LBC Radio. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
And that's the Friday edition of FSN Reports. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can email us reports@featurestory.com and you can follow us on Twitter @FeatureStory. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington alongside Simon Marks on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with FSN everywhere, have a great weekend. Goodbye.